Welcome to the Market Moment. My name is Matt Walters, and I'm here with John Martfeld and Lee Mackey. Got some really good topics today, but before we get into that, remember you can join the Market Moment online community by hitting the subscribe button. Also, we have a brand new series alongside Data Brief. It's called Market 101. They're videos that give basics on finance, economics, and of course, the market. The first of it, episode is available right now if you want to go check it out. So definitely check out. We're putting out a lot of videos, a lot of content. So check out some of the new YouTube channels. Give us a like, subscribe, and comment. We would appreciate that. So let's jump into it, guys. The first topic is the Magnificent Seven's momentum collapsing. UBS Investment Bank Chief U.S. Equity Strategist Jonathan Golub downgraded six of the so-called Magnificent Seven stocks, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta, and NVIDIA, from overweight to neutral. His call comes as the Magnificent Seven, which also includes Tesla, just had its largest weekly market cap loss in history. All seven of the big tech leaders are off their recent highs. As highlighted by a 10% single-day drawdown for NVIDIA, its worst one-day price performance since March 2020. So just this kind of goes on to say, well, let me read this part real quick. The shift is in where earnings are growing the most could be disruptive in the near term, Golub said. But given increasing signs that the U.S. economy is growing faster than expected this year, he thinks a broadening out in the earnings performance over the next year keeps his 5,400 call in the S&P to the end of 2024 in play. This target remains supported by broadly positive fundamentals and a robust economy. So, doesn't sound like he's overly pessimistic about the market as a whole, but just saying, hey, these big tech names are struggling and might continue to turn over.
Well, naturally, I mean, my gosh, they've been on a holy terror, right? I mean, they're doing great. Tesla has its own problem. I mean, they've got the electric vehicle sector is being attacked.
Very different story than most
totally
of the
different others. So I don't know. The others I am not concerned about at all, right? I mean, they've hit all-time highs. They've continuously hit how many all-time highs over the last 3 years for NVIDIA and Microsoft on all of those.
Right.
So naturally, there's going to be a moment where they stop hitting all-time highs and they come back a little bit.
Sure.
Some people would say a buying opportunity. You know, NVIDIA goes down 10%. Maybe that's a buying opportunity. The problem is that it's still up 1,000% over the last 3 years or whatever. So that little dip is not that worrisome. But the good news about the S&P 500 broadening out and the economy still working is that it's no longer dependent on those seven stocks to make the S&P 500 go. And I think that's the most important part of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the I was pulling up this chart real quick. You know, if you look at the S&P 500 year-to-date, the S&P's up just over 5%. Apple's down almost 14%. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a big thing. You know, Apple was the biggest stock in the market. And there was a lot of people asking the question, like, can the market withstand Apple selling off?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And it's proven that, like, so far anyways, I mean, it's the market overall has held up just fine, and Apple struggled.
You know, I think the headline was, you know, is the momentum over mm-hmm. for the Mag 7? It depends on how you define momentum. I do think we're seeing a broadening out of the other 493 stocks in the S&P. They're the leaders.
Right.
However, I think if the economy begins to slow, I think if you begin to see cracks, one of the things that was talked about at a conference I went to a couple weeks ago was if cracks begin to appear, if consumer spending slows down, then the first place you'll probably see the slowdown is in the Mag 7.
Right. Naturally.
Naturally. I mean,
yeah, it's the easiest place to take from.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't think the companies momentum is slowing down. I think you could argue that companies like Meta, Facebook, NVIDIA, I mean, we're in the early innings of this AI, you know, new, what is the word I'm looking for?
This new frontier.
Yeah. And so I would say no. I'd say their momentum as a company is just beginning. Now, does that translate to stock price?
Yeah.
You know, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. You know, I saw something this morning or late last night. You know, there seems to be growing bipartisan support in Washington for a ban on TikTok, giving them kind of a one-year the owners who are Chinese,
right,
1 year to sell their interest in the company. The benefactor, if TikTok is banned in the U.S., is Facebook.
Right.
I mean, there's no other company that stands to benefit the most other than Facebook. So I think Meta, which was kind of a couple years ago, kind of left for dead.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I mean, they
Zuckerberg went through a bad time for a couple years.
He did. You know, he put a lot of his money in the metaverse.
Yeah.
But I think that from a company standpoint, I think the momentum is just getting started. Do I think it translate into continued run up in stock price? You know, that remains to be seen.
Right. Yeah. These things are the seven that led us last year. And I think we all agree that last year was a little bit, that's an unhealthy market, right? When seven are leading, the good news, as Matt pointed out, S&P up 5% with Apple dropping 14. That is a fantastic sign for the market. Sure. That's strength.
Right.
And it's spread, which is what we've been talking about. I have been the pessimist on the panel, obviously. And we know, if anybody's watched any of the other ones, they know I am the pessimist. And lately, I'm a bull normally, but lately, just things have bothered me. But this is a good sign to me, and it doesn't mean that. But also on the front of the market, and I go back to the 20 analysts that predicted the market in 2023 and 2024, and they're so far apart. All of this stuff is hard. It's great to get all this information and for us to talk about it on this show, and that's all great. But ultimately, none of us really know where it's going, and that's where the financial planning is the most important key of our existence.
Well,
but this is fun to talk about.
You know, and Matt made the point earlier that, you know, for the last several years, you know, most people thought that the market could not go up without Apple's participation.
Right.
Apple's kind of in a lull right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're now, Apple's notoriously quiet.
They're getting, you know, crushed in China.
China's putting pressure on them all kinds of ways. Yeah.
And so, you know, you never know. I mean, Apple is a pretty quiet company.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they can announce something that just blows everybody's socks off. But, you know, there's not a lot of excitement coming out of Apple right now. And it's reflected in the stock price.
So when I started in the business 25 years ago, Apple was nothing, you know, and then the iPhone came out and,
sure,
and all that. I mean, they were not nothing, but they were just a stock, you know, and it was up and down. But for the last, let's say since the iPhone came out, you never bet against Apple, in my opinion. They're cash on hand. They're always looking for the next thing. They're always working. I kind of think I'm looking for an opportunity for a buying opportunity for Apple because I just continually believe their company is going to fight through whatever troubles they're having, and I've seen it happen multiple times in the last 20 years. They always make it through. So, yeah, they need to be part of the rally and all that stuff, but they've done so much for the market. They've given so much. A pullback is natural. And
well, I think some of it, you know, looking at the last 6 months, Apple's down almost 4%. Everyone else of these, you know, bigger names,
big names,
16, 24, 41, 60, and 96.
Yeah. Where's Tesla on there?
And, well, I didn't mean pull up Tesla.
Because they're down.
Yeah.
So,
but anyway,
the Tesla's down 30%.
Yeah.
But for there to be some selling in these names, I mean, you're up six. And, you know, I was looking at the one-year chart. It's obviously even more. So for there to be some selling, that money, my thoughts on that money's not leaving the market.
No.
Right? It's going from NVIDIA to another name.
Right.
Right? And so that's why you see the market as a whole holding up pretty well.
Right.
Because that's not money that's selling and then going sit in on the sidelines. It's just coming out of NVIDIA and going into something else,
right,
which is very, I think, normal and rational, right?
Apple is a stock that you hold. I just don't know if you buy. I mean, it's that stock kind of like Amazon where you just want it to be a part of your portfolio forever and ever. Amen.
Right.
But you're not actively buying Apple.
Well, as much as these companies are up, think if so all of the funds, all of the, you know, a lot of funds have like waiting restrictions. A lot of individuals, you know, they'll let a company run for a period of time, but then they have to pull
back
their position.
Exactly.
Right. And so there's natural selling that takes place at certain
like quarterly increments when on some of those ETFs that they'll rebalance. because of that.
Right.
But then you've got some that every 6 months, whatever. But there is a selling that happens.
Yeah, a lot of those people not aren't because they selling sell. All yeah. of their NVIDIA stock.
Exactly.
It's just yeah. they're trimming, right? Because exactly. it's up 200%
exactly. in the last I think year. It's healthy, though. And because stocks like companies that compete, who competes with Apple, really? But, like, there are competitors to NVIDIA that are trying to get in that field, mm-hmm. trying to pressure them, AMD or some others. And so I think you see run up like this, peel off a little bit, go try some of the other competitors who haven't run up the same degree but are trying to do the same things.
You know.
So spreading out, you know.
And with regard to Tesla, you're seeing it now. GM reported earnings today and just blew it out of the water. Yeah. I mean, they beat on the top line, bottom line, and they raised their guidance. You know, and I heard somebody say this morning, you know, GM is just selling the cars that sell.
Right.
They're getting out of everybody's getting out of electric. No one is going to be selling electric cars. Everybody's going back to hybrid.
Right, right.
So yeah,
the plug-in hybrid is so a
is
new
that,
deal.
Is that good or bad for Tesla?
I think it's bad.
I actually, as
a car. I mean, yeah. I think Tesla is making a lot of money on their batteries.
Yeah.
But I think as a car, it's not good because all of these other companies can kind of go both ways.
Right.
You know, we're gonna provide you some electric, but also we're not getting rid of the
Chinese are actually they've got electric vehicles that they're spreading out through Asia, right? Mm-hmm. And it's cheaper labor. Everything is cheaper that they're doing, and so they're able to sell them much cheaper. So I think that could get into some of Tesla's market, which
sure.
I think
there's
Tesla.
A lot of competition.
But I think the U.S. competitors to Tesla, you know, you look at Rivian, and I mean, you could go down the line. Rivian's yeah. probably one of the strong, but they're all struggling. I mean, yeah, pretty mightily.
I would,
and Tesla to me is the one that might hang on.
Don't yeah. save this, but like I would venture to say, like the Rivians and the. Some of these other mm-hmm. will be out of business in 3 years.
Yeah, I think Tesla's going to hang on, and Tesla's going to be the one, because I think electric vehicles are with us forever, even if they're not going to get to the level that some people want them to get to because of lots of reasons. But I think Tesla will always be that one name that you know if you want an electric, that's the first name you think of.
You know, I think one a big hurdle that an all-electric car company has is the access to charging stations.
Oh, sure.
And it's yeah. It's very simple. Yeah. But when we were out in California in January, all of our Uber drivers had Teslas.
Yeah.
And I assumed wrongly, but they prefer Teslas driving around in town because there's charging stations everywhere and they get great, you sure. know, life out of the battery. But they hate them for road trips.
Sure, yeah.
Which is the exact opposite of a gas engine. You know, gas gets sure. worse gas mileage driving around town and better on the road.
Yeah.
Because they say that, you know, you're using more battery when you're at 70, 80 miles an hour and you're having to go only routes yeah. where there's charging
I mean, the
stations.
Future of EV, the downside to this is so dependent on, like, legislation and yeah. regulation.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot to be because I don't think the organic demand. I just speaking personally of people
yeah.
I know,
yeah.
the people that are just naturally interested in going to buy an electric vehicle is not exploding, right? That's not a growth. So,
well, if you can't drive across country in it, because you can't, and there's been plenty of stories where you've had traffic delays or storms,
oh, yeah.
or whatever, and then the electric cars have to be, somebody has to come get them and pick them up because they get, their battery runs out, you know, the yeah. cold and the whatever. And it is actually very frustrating. The other thing I think that hasn't hit the market yet that will, and it will be, to me, it'll be kind of a interesting inflection point for electric vehicles. When the batteries start wearing out on these cars, which is going to happen soon, because we've had, what, 5, 6, 7 years of Teslas. I don't even know how many years we've had. But the batteries are going to start dying. And to replace the battery is almost as much as buying a new car, a new electric car.
Hmm.
And when that happens and you see all of these pretty little electric cars that aren't that old, but they're unusable because you have to go buy a $25,000 battery.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be sure. a massive problem, and it's going to bring people back to the plug-in hybrids or the hybrids
yeah.
and whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So don't buy Tesla.
Matt right. said that.
Yeah. So John just mentioned a minute ago talking about cheap Chinese goods. So bipartisan worry uniting Washington. President Biden's recent call for the tripling of tariffs on Chinese steel was just the latest example of how voters – we'll have a choice this fall that is of degree as opposed to changes in direction when it comes to China trade. Both Both camps are lining up behind increasingly protectionist plans. Biden is calling for tariff hikes on Chinese on select Chinese sectors. Trump wants 60% tariffs across the board. His plan for 60% tariffs would impact a wide array of goods and would impact the trade in trillions of dollars of goods projected in the years ahead. So Trump's aides are even reportedly proposing more extreme measures, such as devaluing the dollar, a move that would further restrict imports from China, but also one that would reignite inflation. So thoughts on this? It's always interesting to see what, you know, both sides agree on. It's always like random stuff.
Well, I could tell you it's kind of interesting because this would not have been the case when on the last election, right? Anything that Trump was for, the opposite party was against, right? Sure. So the fact that they're on the same page here tells you there are troubling signs of what China is doing. Just think, go back in the 90s when China coupled its currency to the U.S. dollar, right? That's the, they're talking about Trump wants to decouple.
Yeah.
Well, that's when it was coupled, right? And China needed that desperately. If you go back and look at their economy, we helped them get from the dark ages to the today's time.
Sure.
We fast-forwarded them on a fast track. Now they are intent on keeping going forward, right? And they're not going to worry about, you know, I think that's the concern, is that it's a communist government ultimately, even though they have some capitalist little things they try to do, you know, they try to get the best.
It's all for show.
It's all for show. But I think this is interesting. So now I think the eyes have opened from both parties that we've got to be a little tougher on China. Again, go back 4 years ago, that was definitely a complete split between the parties. Now with the election coming up now, it's funny how that's suddenly becoming a problem for Joe Biden, you know, when it wasn't 4 years ago. But anyway, that's my...
It's... there's always going to be cheap goods that come out of China. I think it's always going to be a political issue. Either one of y'all heard of the company Shein? Have y'all heard of that clothing company? Mm-hmm. Your wives have. Zoe probably has.
Okay.
Great. I'm going to immediately look at my credit card statement.
Well, Shein... My girls love it because you can buy primarily women's. I don't know. It may be guys too, but cheap clothes.
And good quality, as you were just saying.
Fairly good quality. Yeah. Very inexpensive. I mean, you can buy shirts for $8 and $10. I just was. It started in China. They, in 2022, became the world's largest fashion retailer.
What?
Wow. They have just recently moved to Singapore for some obvious reasons, but they've left their supply chain, they've left their manufacturing all in China.
And I'm assuming they sell all over Asia too, right? India,
everywhere.
Everywhere,
but
right.
If now that we're talking about it, it'll probably show up on our phones.
Yeah.
But they have been in the news lately because going public, do they go public in America?
Oh, right. Yeah.
In Asia. But Shein, S H E I N is the name of the company.
I'm gonna look at
it.
It
has become the world's largest fashion retailer, and you'll see. I mean, my daughters have gotten boxes of it, and literally there'll be two or three boxes, and it'll be $80.
Wow!
But it's.
I mean, what are y'all's thoughts, just generally on tariffs, in general? Like,
well, they're trying, so that keeps American goods where we
it protects us.
It protects us. So, I mean, I get it on that front. And I think about, like...
I mean, I didn't ask you to explain what a tariff was.
Well,
thoughts on
tariffs? I think we should do that. And I think that China can kind of cheat the system because they do not have labor laws. Mm-hmm. They do not have unions. They don't have anything. It's all...
trying to equalize the playing field.
It's kind of equalizing the playing field. They can do things and not pay their people anything.
Yeah.
And then that, therefore, they can sell stuff far less. But it's kind of almost like it's not the lack of a better term, but almost kind of dirty stuff, right? Because it's coming from who knows what kind of labor force and what they're being treated like. And so that's where China has a huge advantage, and the tariffs just kind of equalize that field.
You know, and when Trump, you know, that was a big part of his presidency is slapping these tariffs on China.
Yeah.
And it was such a lightning rod. I mean, you would have thought that they were this horrible thing that we were doing. But he was trying to protect American businesses.
American businesses, yeah.
I don't think it'll ever be equal.
Right. It'd be interesting to see how China reacted if we truly went down that path and stuck with it for longer term, right? Because we're obviously such a significant part of their continued growth.
Sure.
So they need our markets open to them. And so it, you know, now it's inflationary, right?
Very much.
I mean, we would have to accept, we as Americans, we have to accept the fact like, hey, if we want to make things here, produce things here, make it more equal across the playing field around the world, that all sounds great. But, you know, that $8 shirt's going to cost you $32.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just the reality of it.
Think about it on the car side.
And to that point,
yeah,
the consumer, they don't care. They just want, you know.
For the most part.
They don't care.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
If we're looking at two shirts, one's 12, one's 30,
yeah,
can't tell the difference. Most people are going to buy a $12 shirt.
Well, and that's why, I mean, think about Japanese, like Toyota, Honda, have been so successful in the United States. And what do they have that the United States doesn't? They don't have unions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So there's some, like, stuff on our side that causes prices to go up dramatically that I'm not for. I mean, I think that we've overdone that. We're overusing that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And it's created higher prices where China has none of that. So it's like two separate ends of the spectrum. We're dealing with all this that we have to have cost higher. They have none of that, and so their costs are extremely lower. So there is like a problem there. You could run all of those guys out of business. Could you imagine if the union leadership went over to China and tried to open unions in China?
Yeah. You know, but to Matt's point, it is inflationary. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's you got to kind of put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly.
At some point.
Yep.
So, all right, company. Last topic, companies filing bankruptcy. So Express files, apparel retailer Express files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, as well as Red Lobster, brand management firm WHP Global, and others on Monday sent Express a non-binding letter of intent to possibly buy a substantial majority of its operations. The bankruptcy will also involve some 95 Express locations and all UpWest stores permanently shutting their doors. Red Lobster is reportedly considering filing for bankruptcy to relieve financial pressures that have weighed on the company for years. According to a reported Bloomberg citing people familiar with the discussions, Red Lobster is weighing a Chapter 11 bankruptcy to renegotiate burdensome leases, blah, blah, blah. So any thoughts here? I haven't looked at like a bankruptcy.
Can they just make sure
Chapter 11 is just restructuring. Correct. So they're not close. They don't necessarily have – I know Express is going to close some things down, but – that doesn't mean they're going out of business,
no,
right?
It just means they want a different way to pay their debts.
Yes, yeah. They're restructuring, which is common if you're struggling, which obviously they're saying that they have been.
You know, I'm surprised we haven't seen more. Yeah.
And I think you will start seeing more.
I think over the next 12 months.
The longer rates stay higher, yes. Right? Because all of the – we're only a couple of years into this higher rate. You know,
it has not regime. Even flown. It has not flowed through the economy yet.
And yeah. And so you have a lot of that debt is fixed for at least a period of time, if not long term fixed. And but yeah, it's fixed for a period of time. So if rates come back down in the next 12 months, then you may not see a whole lot of that because they will be able to refinance and do the things they need to do. But if rates stay high for long, like the poorly managed companies that have just been hit harder for whatever reason are going to kind of get to a point where they have to do something.
Yeah.
Well, restaurants, you oftentimes see it in restaurants, food prices, you know, and at some
food
point.
Food prices and a year off, you know, with COVID.
Yeah, so, I mean, at some point you can't continue to pass that along to the consumer. Yeah. And then retail. I mean, those two industries seem to always.
With your clothes coming from China at $8 a shirt compared to 40. Yeah. Their retail has pressure all over the place.
Yeah, I'm surprised that we haven't seen more bankruptcies.
Yeah, me too.
And we probably will.
I think we're going to start seeing more and more.
You know what will be interesting? This is kind of off topic. Is over the next 12 months, do we see any more banks?
Struggling. Yeah, I mean, that could happen too.
Yeah. You know, Jamie Dimon kind of warned about that in his letter that if rates actually go up, which – I don't think any of us think they will. But if the Fed has to, you know, hike rates a couple times, then you could see some real stress.
Hey, I actually think it's a higher probability than we're giving it credit for. I think the Fed is not doing anything because of the election and so on. But probably. I think there is a possibility. If the economy continues to soar and inflation does not cool, because that, remember, his main focus was to get it down to 2%. And he would raise rates until it happened. I know in election year he's probably not going to, But anyway, if that did happen, I think that that's a bad sign.
You can mark the tape. This is episode 199.
Yeah.
You can mark the tape. I don't think we ever see 2%.
No, I agree. I agree with you totally. I think they're going to have to change their tune on that.
I think so.
But, I mean, if they go back to that premise, they would be raising rates right now. If they really, truly believe that they needed to get to 2%, I think they'd be raising rates still, which would not be good.
All right. Anything else?
No.
No, that's it.
It's good topics.
It's good topics.
There's a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the deeper we go into this year, things will get a lot more interesting as far as just – you know, geopolitical, politics, election year. We are right in the need. We're going into earnings season. This will be a critical one.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think this will be a big 2 or 3 weeks.
And the world stage, I think, the Iranian, Israeli, Hamas, all that stuff is just getting worse, right? It doesn't seem like it's getting better. In the United States, we have our own problems with the rallies and so on that are getting violent. This is going to be a hot summer. I mean, for lots of reasons. And
you know, one thing I learned in New York a couple weeks ago that I did not know. The European Union, the 13-14 countries, there was only like 2 or 3 of those countries that had a military. But
say that again.
Of the European Union countries, and I think there's 13 or 14 of them.
Yeah,
there's only like 2 or 3 of those countries that had a physical military. But after the Ukraine invasion, Russia invaded, more of those countries are now beefing up a physical military, missiles, tanks, guns.
This is going to sound like I'm a big Trump fan because I've said 2 things about Trump that he did in his presidency. It doesn't mean that. But one of the things he pressured the EU to put their fair share into NATO, if you remember that. And that's when it exposed that these countries were not putting their 2% of GDP towards military, and they were not doing it. And then Ukraine was invaded, and it's kind of I think it's woken everybody up, and it should. I mean, that's a true threat. Yeah. But anyway,
we digress.
Yep. Yeah, I have no idea how we got there. I wasn't listening. So we had a comment from last week. Good question. Let's please not spend too long on it.
Okay.
Why are so many countries buying up gold? Even the U.S., but especially China, would be interesting to see a trend of global buy-up by region of the world over the past 10 years. So I was kind of looking to see what I could find real quick online. I couldn't find the, 10-year trend, but...
I don't know. There's my response.
Yeah.
You said keep it short.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, it is looking at 2023. So on the World Gold Council website, no idea there was such a thing. China, Poland, Singapore, Libya, and the Czech Republic bought the most gold last year in terms of increases.
Well, inflation around the world is going crazy. I mean, gold is the answer.
I don't think it's as an investment. I think it's as a protection.
It's a protection.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I think inflation is probably people see that.
For those who are interested, the countries who sold the most, Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan.
Those are the first 2 ones I would have.
Yeah, I've definitely had those on top.
Pretty obvious.
But just don't ask me to spell either one of those.
Yeah. Or point them on a map.
Correct.
All right. Well,
a lot of consonants, not a lot of vowels.
Yeah. I think the moral of the story is that other than just hedging their currency, protecting the stability of their currency and all that, not experts on that, so we won't pretend to be. But anyways, appreciate you guys listening. Be sure to leave us a comment. And if you're an audio listener only, you can submit your questions and comments to themarketmoment@mach1fg.com. So that's themarketmoment@mach1fg.com, and there'll be a link in the show notes. So we appreciate you guys listening, and we'll see you next week.
The hosts of this show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC registered investment advisor located in Rogers, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak to your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, click on the link in the episode description below.